Welcome to Marshall Pruitt Podcast. I'm here with my old friend and colleague, Robin Miller. Going to do something new. The week in IndyCar news, going to look back at all the major things that have taken place. And if this is something that folks like, we might even do more. Robin, we are coming off of the Phoenix Open test. You and I are there for both days. I wrote about it, yapped about it in my rewind column, but haven't heard about your thoughts and takeaways from 21 IndyCars, some new faces, different teams, and a variety of things that went on. What are your takeaways from 2 days in sunny Phoenix?
The number one takeaway was it should be one day. I think everybody kind of agreed. You only have six or seven sets of tires. You don't need to be there for 2 days. And probably would have saved some people some money. Although you're going to crash, it probably didn't matter what day it was, because when you're going to go trim out and try out to get a qualifying setup, and I'm not sure quite understand qualifying setups at night, but another story. I think they qualify in the daytime. I guess the other thing was nothing that happened there was really, I don't think you take away much, because I don't think Chevrolet really showed their hand like they did last year. I think you and I were even talking, I think Marco was quick last year when we left there and we came back. And so it was kind of like Chevy and qualifying at most of the road street courses. You know, who cares what happens the first round of practice? When it means something, they go out and kick everybody's butt. So it's going to be an uphill climb for, I think Kanaan had the most telling quote of the weekend. He said, Honda's got a lot of good things, they got a lot of bad things, but we got a lot of work to do. And talking to Mike Hall like you did and I did, basically saying they started from scratch. Connor Daly saying that nothing they had from the Honda setup before have any bearing on what they had now with their Chevrolet kit. So a lot of learning for a lot of teams, so I think that was good for them. And I think for the drivers, if you haven't been in a car in months, it's always good. But it'd be nice to see, since you're on the West Coast, it'd be nice to see it one test day at a road course on the West Coast and then a travel day and then go to Phoenix. I think you could get a lot more done.
The other fun thing was talking to some of the drivers that have switched camps and hearing from those who had the Chevys and what it was like working with the Honda high downforce aero kit for the first time. And there were some very different and peculiar handling differences. And let's just say that some folks who were living high and mighty and happy last year were looking a little bit peaked. And definitely wondering what, I don't want to say what they got themselves into, but then you look at some who went the opposite direction, and they were smiling pretty big, like, wow, now I understand not only why we got our behinds kicked at most road and street courses and short ovals last year by Chevy, but wow, the guys driving those cars seem to have things a bit easier than we did. So not picking on our friends at Honda by any means, but this was a very demonstrative test for me, just listening to folks having changed camps and come away understanding that, okay, now everything that happened in 2016 makes sense, but it also speaks to what 2017 is going to be like as well, knowing the disparity in the road course slash short oval aero kits. Well, the big news of the week, Robin, which, you know, granted, I think this has been written by plenty of folks more than once, ourselves included, but big news of the week was confirmation from Kevin Kalkoven and Jimmy Vassar that KV Racing is done. We know that some of the equipment has moved on to Ricardo Juncos, championship-winning Indy Lights team owner, and Pro Mazda team, or championship-winning Pro Mazda team owner as well. You and I had been hearing that all that KV equipment could be had for about $2.4 million. I don't think Juncos got all of it, but nonetheless, KV Racing, you've been covering them since day one. They started up a few years before I moved over to this writing and reporting career. What comes to mind about KV coming in, Robin, and thoughts about them going out?
I just remember meeting Kalkoven right when the IRL Camp Car World was heating up, and he showed up, and you know, I think I wrote a story. I know I wrote a story for Car and Driver about maybe this is the guy we've been looking for, because he had so much money and he seemed to have a lot of passion for open wheel racing. And you know, they fought the good fight and kept some Champ Car tracks and teams going. And then you know, he got together with Tony George and they put everything back together, which was obviously heated. But I think with Kalkoven, it was he was. He unlike maybe other people in the past, he spent a lot of his own money. And, I mean, that's the bottom line in this business. If you have somebody willing to spend it, I mean, Paul Newman and Carl Haas spent their own money when their sponsorships dried up and they got stiffed by a sponsor. They didn't hesitate. Cal Coven, I mean, he had one shaky business partner named Craig Gore, and I don't think Derek Walker was treated very well, but I give Cal Coven props for the fact that he spent his own money and he tried to keep the thing going as long as he could.
I'd also say that they definitely made an effort to run as many cars as they could. There are a lot of fairly incredible drivers who went through that team in 10, 12, 13 years. Obviously won the 2013 Indy 500 with Tony Kanaan, a high water mark for them. Tell me about some of the drivers, though. I don't want to say that they were coin-esque, in that they had high turnover. Just, I look at the volume of drivers that went through their team, and maybe where Dale, for a few too many years, had folks we'd never heard of, but was able to bring some money. You look at KV, and a lot of drivers went through there, but for the most part, most of them were quality individuals, and they definitely brought some new names to the series, too.
I always chuckle at Patrick Lamarie. I guess he was my favorite, because I think IndyCar scared him to death, and now he's a star at Le Mans, so that's the one guy that stands out. D'Amato won their first race for him, I think it was in Portland, and that was just a big moment for him and for Cal Coven and for that whole team. Dan Pettit was part of it then. So, I think, like I said, they tried racing. I mean, they made a big step, and Newman Haas and players clearly had the experience and most of the talent in Champ Car back then. And Cal Coven, they did what they could with what they were afforded. I think you out and got some pretty good people right away. But I think everybody's really, it's interesting, a lot of the posts and stuff on Facebook or racing website are like, people are, it's terrible that we lost another team. And it is. It's always, you can't lose. This series can't afford any teams. But the fact that Ricardo Juncos is back, and I think I had lunch with Jay Fry yesterday, and I think, it's only a matter of before Trevor Collins becomes part of the series. And then if we get Brian Bellari, that's the future of IndyCar. So, I mean, I'm not so depressed in the fact that I'm sad that Vassar and Cal Coven are gone. Trace McKinney. But I like the fact that we get some youth and some new blood that are going to be around for a long time, and that's exactly what IndyCar needs. And to your point a minute ago about, Honda's a couple tenths down, and it's all going to even out. I think next year, when everybody has the same aero kit, and everything's going to be about like it was a couple years ago, and you have no idea who's going to win a race. Juncos and just the fact that he's moving up, and there's other guys waiting in the wing, bodes well, because as you and I both know, 21 cars for every race is just fine. It's really shaky Pocono with 21 cars in a 5-round-mile race, and of course the Indies struggle to get 33 every year.
We also look at the fact that for what Juncos is trying to do this year, looking to do two cars at Indianapolis and hopefully two cars at Pocono, know that he has one driver more or less locked in for the first seat at Indy. That second seat is indeed open. So there's some potential there, which is good. In years past, there's definitely an issue of either lack of vehicle availability or lack of interest in some team owners to put extra cars on the grid. So at least for the 101st Indy 500, it's good to know that new team coming in, plus definitely one open seat right now. So I would expect a number of folks to be looking at that. And then also just the sheer numbers, not enough team owners. And Indy Lights has been a place in the past where teams can get their feet wet, look to grow, look to move up and expand. Haven't seen a ton of that in recent years, but I love the idea that IndyCar can look to Lights and see that it does have the ability to grow. And it does have team owners who have come in, got a feel for the business, run alongside IndyCar, spoken with the management there, and deciding that it really is something that they not only want to do, but makes business sense for them. Now, I mean, granted, we're not saying it's easy, and I think IndyCar still has a lot more work to do to make the financials really makes sense for Indy Lights team owners to jump up and graduate. But if Juncos can be the first to open that door and create a little bit of a wave to move in, we should hopefully be in a much better place in a couple of years. Your man, Mr. A. Anthony Joseph Foyt, saw him at the test. Also definitely trying to get rid of some pain. Your story, Robin, about AJ preparing to undergo stem cell treatment, that one I found rather interesting. I mean, at 82 years old, I don't know of many folks who would be trying something as different as that to try and alleviate pain. Where'd that idea come from for AJ?
I'm not sure, because I called him Monday or Tuesday, and I said, hey, you told me you were never going back to hospital unless it was in a black sack. You ain't never going, you've had it. You're not going back to, no more doctors, no more surgery, that's it. What the hell's going on? And he laughed, and he says, well, I think, I talked to Dr. Trammell and Lucy, and there's been some pretty famous people like Pink Manny had. He goes, I'm just tired of aching all the time. My feet always hurt. My ankle always hurt. My shoulder always hurts. So he goes, they're going to take some of the fat cells out of me. And he goes, God knows I got plenty of those. And he's pretty funny. So the tough Texan he's going to wait till probably June to do it. Because obviously not in this month, May. He's going to Mexico to have surgery. Knowing how much he detests all that stuff, you know, it just, somebody convinced him. Let's put it that way. Somebody said, hey, man, this is going to make you quit hurting. And I think we probably don't realize how much he's hurt since the early 90s. That Alpine Lake, I mean, that's one of the most devastating crashes ever in a race car. And, you know, he maybe doesn't show it on his face so much, but, you know, you watched him, and he's really getting out in and out of a golf cart or climb up the time stand. It's very, very painful.
Well, also just a reminder of the level of toughness that, I don't know, you could say legendary, but it was really just became part and parcel of what so many drivers from his era dealt with. And that's not to say that, you know, everyone's was tougher back then and everyone's weaker now. No, not at all. But we do know for sure that between AJ Foyt, Parnelli Jones, Dan Gurney, you name it, those who have been in accidents, been hurt, whether it was back then or even in recent years, just folks that were, you could almost say, in constant pain, in constant peril, and knew that to continue in their career, you had to swallow it because it was coming at a regular rate of you hurt this, bruised this, broke that, bumped this. And with the number of races that they did each year, just the law of averages said, you're going to be hurt, and you're going to be hurt a fair amount. And if you want to keep doing this thing, then you're just going to have to, you know, truly just suck it up and go. And so when you see someone like AJ, who's been in pain forever, you hate to see that. You'd like to know that, you know, late in life, he's done something to alleviate that, where he isn't going into his fifth decade of just cringing with every single step. So the thought of AJ going to Mexico to have this procedure done, definitely a little bit comical, but happy to hear that he's doing it nonetheless.
I just hope there's a video. I thought I was taking a camera. Film it for us.
So our boy Graham Rahal is going to have Steak and Shake back. Steak and Shake is going to be back for four races as primary sponsor. Last year, looked this morning, last year it was five, actually. Last year, the Steak and Shake was on for both rounds in Indianapolis, the Grand Prix and the 100th running. This year, that's changed, so they apparently won't be on the car for the Grand Prix. Doom and Gloom. Oh my God, Steak and Shake, they're pulling back. They're sponsoring 20% fewer races with the team than it did last year. Or should we be looking at that saying, hey, Steak and Shake is back. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I think it was a lark that they got involved a couple years ago. And then Graham, you know, he had such a good season, and they were on the car so many of his good runs. And I think it was kind of a revelation for them. Like, man, the timing was perfect for this. But they're not, I don't know how big a company they are, and I don't know how gung-ho they've, I think, and Graham going to the Steak and Shakes and passing out sponsors, and you know, just like the old Target Wars, different people every couple races on a car. And I think that's more and more how any car sponsorship's going to have to be. We're not going to find $10 million sponsors. You're going to have to find four or five that can maybe throw in a million or two and just make it work that way. So I think Ray Hall, I think that's his plan, and I think the fact it's a cool color scheme, and that this is the third or fourth year now. I think third year. So no, I look at it as that's good. I mean, you know, four races or five races, who cares if they're still on the car? That's the most important thing.
Every year at Indianapolis, you have folks that come to the media center and walk through and distribute big old steak and shake, usually vanilla shakes, maybe some chocolate in there. And obviously everybody's face lights up, but it also strikes me that, you know, usually while it is hot and humid outside, the last people on the property that should be given anything cold or rewarding are those of us in the frickin' media center sitting on our asses in air conditioning. If anything, those shakes should be handed out to the mechanics and crew and those in the grandstands. But, you know, I realize they want us to write positive things about them, so I get the reason why they try and give them to us. But I just always find that funny. Like, really? This, you know, come on. Everyone here is already eating free as it is. You don't need to, you need to give them dessert as well.
I think AJ, he would certainly like chocolate milkshake. He likes ice cream. We know that, but it's got to be Bluebell, buddy.
I figured it'd be vanilla, not chocolate, but that's interesting. All right, Miller. Well, the last thing to talk about, and this is always one of your areas of expertise as a Indianapolis man. We have Alexander Rossi's lovely face on the 101st Indy 500 race ticket. What are sales like so far? We know that the 100th last year, of course, going to be sold out. They actually had to add extra seating, extra little corporate hospitality seating and whatnot. How are things going for 101st ticket sales with our boy Rossi's face on it?
Well, as you know, because when we interviewed Mark Milo the other day, he said it was better than it was in 2015, the pre-race sales. I know you could, well, people call, write the mailbag and say, where should I sit? I go to Speedway's map and look, and there's, you know, there's not really high tickets left in the Vistas. There's one Vista, maybe a third turn Vista you could get at four in row U. So I look at that as a good gauge. If you can't get double figure rows, and here we are in the wintertime, it's not going to be like last year. There's going to be empty seats. But, it's going to be over 200,000 people, and that's the biggest sporting crowd that there is. And I think Miles said something about they're even thinking that they might have to add some suites again like they did last year, because the demand for suites has been pretty good.
Yeah.
It's just the kind of thing where I think that a lot of people said they weren't going to, like, last year was the last year they were coming and they're not coming back. So maybe there's going to be some new ticket holders. Maybe there's some people that went last year for the first time and they liked it and they're coming back. So I say it's better than I anticipated. That's how I look at how the ticket sales are so far. Because when you go on the internet, you can go on their website to see what's left. It's better than just having people say, "Oh, ticket sales are great." You know, they're always going to tell you that. But I think they are better than we thought.
All right, let's close on what I think was both of our favorite comment from the Phoenix IndyCar test. You and I walked down to the garage, saw Scott Dixon's all-white number 9 Chip Ganassi Racing Honda. First time we've seen it without Target logos on it forever. And one of the mechanics had a great line about them having the all-white car. Came up to us and said something along the lines of car was looking a little bit too much like one of the old Dale Coyne cars they were comfortable with. No sponsorship, no anything, and no real hint of what was coming. So we do know that there is some sponsorship coming for the car. They aren't ready to announce what sponsors will be on it, but I do know that they do have sponsors coming. So nonetheless, hopefully when we get back to St. Petersburg, we will be talking about something other than a cue ball Scott Dixon car.
I think you know, it's going to be just like everybody else. I think it's going to be able to go with different sponsors all year, and that's part of probably how everybody else is going to have to operate most of the time.
All right, Robin Miller, this is our first look back the week in IndyCar news. Trying to
23 minutes, cut it down to 12 that people listen to. Take all the O's and the R's out that we said.
Oh, geez. I don't have that much time, but hopefully, sprinkling in a little bit extra than what we're able to put on the written page has been of value, and who knows, maybe we'll be back next week for number 2.